Chapter 8. Thunderstruck. Abersford.
Yosef had doled out to Dira the medical knowledge he thought the culture could handle, although he constantly agonized over what he had transferred and what he could already have given the Gedali and all of the peoples of Anyar. Unfortunately, if he pushed too hard, he had no way to predict the consequences. Even after he'd established his current position and reputation, he still feared pushing too hard could lead to total rejection or his demonization. There was also practicality. He had no reason to attempt to introduce knowledge that people couldn't utilize. That didn't mean he ignored new possibilities, such as one triggered by a comment of Hu Yun Linwer, the Gwilimese trader who had helped Yosef start kerosene production and had taken over operations as a partner, becoming wealthy in his own right. Yosef had only casually listened until Linwer said,
"Too bad Watmer lost his arm at Moreland City. I hate losing one of my better drivers."
It took several moments for the comment to edge into Yosef's consciousness. Vinan Watmer, an Abersford man, drove tanker wagons filled with crude oil from the seeps in the Gwilimer province border to the kerosene distillation facility, growing ever larger near Abersford. Watmer was also one of the swivel gun crewmen who had suffered a wound at the battle. Linwer had continued talking, though, about what Yosef had no idea.
"Watmer," said Yosef, interrupting Linwer. "He lost his arm? I saw him at Moreland City and then when he arrived back in Abersford. His arm was bandaged, but he acted like it wasn't that serious."
"It didn't seem to be, but it festered, and the medicans couldn't save the arm. Now he can't drive a wagon anymore. The Keelan clan is providing some coin to the men whose injuries stopped them from their previous trade, but he makes less coin than when he worked for me. I'm trying to find him some other task he can do. So if you have any ideas, let me know."
Yes, we'll have to take care of him. I'll think about all my other shops. Maybe we can find something more for him."
Though Yosef was sincere, his mind had moved on.
"Christ, at least we have the ether now."
He remembered the elderly man with the badly shattered leg from an accident at the Snarling Greco. Yosef and Carnegie had helped transport the man to the Abbey Hospital. There, Yosef learned no painkillers were available, and the man later died during the amputation. The event had triggered Yosef into realizing he could produce ether. Success, with monetary help and the prestige of Abbot Sistian, had laid the foundation for all of his other enterprises. Now, a similar stimulus compelled him to seek out Dira, the Abbey's chief medicant, who had overseen his care when he was cast by the Watchers onto Aquilan Beach. She had developed into a friend. St. Sidran's Abbey. Dira Bainham looked up from the piles of papers scattered in front of her and around the edges of her desk. In the month since she'd returned from helping attend to the wounded at the Battle of Moreland City, she only seemed to get further behind with paperwork. Issues delayed for the 2 6 days she was absent from the Abbey. Updates on the wounded, reports to Hetman Keelan and other medicans throughout Cadellium on her observations during and after the battle, and recommendations for future action. Correspondence with influential medicans, once again throughout the island, on changes in medican knowledge and treatments resulting from interactions with Yosef Kolsko, and the never-ending flow of ongoing issues involving the operation of St. Sidran's Abbey's hospital, overseeing the medicans, and acting as the district training center for new medicans. Thus, she felt both a sense of anticipation and a sinking feeling when a knock on her door presented her with the same Yosef Kolsko. He entered her office with an expression she recognized as accompanying some new idea he was about to share with her.
"Hello, Yosef. Please come in."
"Thank you, Dira. Sorry to bother you, but I've had this new idea."
She laid down her quill and sat back. sighing at the realization of her hopes and fears.
"Excuse me, Joseph, but I wonder if you'll ever run out of new ideas."
"Not if I can stay alive," thought Joseph. "And so soon after, you were wounded."
"It takes a licking and keeps on ticking," he mumbled before he could stop the words from spilling out of his mouth. Dira's puzzled look brought him back to alertness.
"Sorry, Joseph, what did you say?"
"Oh, nothing, just some children's rhyme. I can't remember how it all goes. Well, hell, the Timex watch commercial is sort of like a nursery rhyme."
"Anyway," he hurried on, before she could ask for more explanation,
"I talked with Holian Linwer, the Guillemese who runs the kerosene production. He mentioned that one of his drivers, Vinan Watmer, had his arm amputated when the wound he got at Moreland City festered."
"Yes, too bad," said Dira. "We thought it was healing, but a 6 day after he returned, he came to the hospital complaining about increased pain and fever. When Brother Bolwen examined the wound, he could see festering had set in. We tried all the treatments we knew of, but it spread, and we were forced to remove the arm. Thank merciful God once again for the ether you've given us, so at least Watmer remained unconscious during the operation. Festering doesn't always happen with open wounds, but this one was deep. Your comments about microorganisms have helped explain how the festering occurs, and we're taking more precautions, as you've suggested. Unfortunately, it didn't help Watmer."
"That's what I wanted to talk to you about, festering. My people know of treatments that can provide additional prevention and can help once an infection has started. It involves using substances called antibiotics."
Dira sighed again. Another new word. Another treatment she'd never heard of. Another case where she wanted to ask, scream at times, why Joseph hadn't mentioned this one earlier. Usually he said it just occurred to him, which fed into the rumors about the stranger, who had appeared on the nearby shore, might be a Septarch, one to whom God spoke. Lore had it that often the person was not even aware of the source of inspiration, but simply that God whispered into his or her ear. At moments like this, Dira was tempted to ask Joseph whether he heard voices. Instead, she merely asked her usual question.
"What is this antibiotics, and how does it work?"
Joseph launched into a description of how some microorganisms excrete antibiotics to suppress competing organisms. He didn't go into injections yet, since he had no idea how long it would take to work out a method of purification sufficient to risk introducing crude extracts into the body. However, he remembered that the filtrate of antibiotic-producing fungi and bacteria had been successfully used to saturate cloth applied to open wounds. It took only a minute for Dira to decide she had heard more details than she had time or understanding to appreciate.
"Let's go talk to Brother Wilwin about this," said Dira. And they walked to one of the Abbey complex's workshops used by the resident biologist.
They found Wilwin Wallington in his work area, today worrying about another flat of pea seedlings, the same type of peas Joseph had used to demonstrate genetic inheritance to the naturalist Scholastic.
"Wilwin," said Dira, "Joseph has another of his ideas he'd like to explain. Do you have time to listen?"
"For Joseph, always,"
said Wallington, smiling and setting aside the plants.
"What is it this time?"
"He says his people have a treatment to prevent or help with wound festering. He started explaining to me, but I thought we'd let you listen, since it involves the microorganisms you're studying."
"Well, right now my main focus is the peas," said Wallington. "I have too much to do with the genetics Joseph explained. However, one of the new Scholastic trainees is concentrating on the microorganisms, although I work with him whenever I can."
"Best fetch him over then," said Dira.
Wallington walked toward the far side of the room, where two young men and a woman huddled over something.
"Trainees?"
queried Joseph.
That's right. I don't think you visited Brother Wilwyn since you returned. His communications with other scholastics around Keelan and other provinces created quite a stir, as seems to be usual when you're around. Three abbeys have sent students interested in becoming scholastics here to St. Sidran's to work and study with Wilwyn.
Deira shook her head.
This seems to be only the beginning. Wilwyn tells me that six scholastic brothers and sisters around Cadellium have asked to join the university you and Mera are planning. What with other voicing interest in doing the same, Wilwyn says he needs to discuss with Mera whether they should limit the number in the beginning.
But we hardly have any of the new buildings started yet,
Joseph protested.
That's what I advised, Wilwyn, said Deira. His work area here is already overflowing, and now with the three students, the clutter is even worse, which I was surprised could happen. It's the same problem in the hospital. We have requests for more student medicins to come here than we can either house or train. Plus, there's all the knowledge that relates to treating patients. We also have 8 visiting medicins from other abbeys in Keelan, and have had to postpone visits from abbeys in other provinces, which doesn't make St. Sidran's very popular.
At least it shows the ideas in medicine and biology I've introduced are spreading, mused Joseph. Wilwyn returned with one of the students, the other two trailing behind. Without preamble, Joseph addressed Wallington.
As I told Sister Deira, there are microorganisms that naturally produce substances poisonous to other microorganisms. Think of it as similar to herd animals with horns for defense, or predator animals with fangs, a characteristic that aids in the organism's survival. In the example I'm speaking of, a microorganism secretes a substance to prevent itself from being attacked, or having to compete for space with other microorganisms.
So these ones that produce the poison, do you know which ones?
Asked Wallington. Joseph spent the next half hour answering questions, mainly from the scholastic, but an increasing number from the students in Deira. It was a discouraged Wallington who summarized.
Please correct me if I've misheard, Joseph, but this sounds like an enormous task with uncertain chances of success. This antibiotic you speak of, you call it penicillin? Comes from only a specific mold, a fungus. You can't identify which one, only that you think the fungus is green when growing on food. From what I've learned and from your information, there are thousands of different molds, many of them green. We would have to try each one to hope to find at least one producing this penicillin. Then to test each one, we'd have to grow it in a plate containing a growth medium. We've been experimenting with this agar you told us comes from seaweed. We had seaweed shipped to us from the port of Salford, east along the coast. It took time for a man we paid to collect different types of seaweed and ship it to us quickly enough before it rotted. We've only recently had some promising results, but I think it will be many months before we're ready to try growing microorganisms on top of a solidified bed of agar. We've also been experimenting with liquids containing nutrients that allow the creatures to grow, but the only liquids that show promise are acid-treated cattle blood and milk with the fat removed. You weren't able to tell us why the acid treatment was necessary, but so far all we get is incredibly foul-smelling slop. Although I'll admit, microorganisms grow readily on it. Too readily, in fact.
Joseph stared, mentally stepping back and assessing the scope of what he'd proposed. He swallowed. It was too much.
He had carefully avoided suggesting projects that involved too many steps, especially those requiring materials that needed to be made, each of which required other materials, and on and on. In his enthusiasm for antibiotics, he'd broken his own rule. It would be years before anything useful resulted, if at all.
Based on the little he knew of how to recognize specific strains, because his enhanced memory didn't work for subjects he hadn't studied, they would have to test thousands of samples and only after working out growth and maintenance conditions. The latter facet hadn't occurred to him until now, how to keep cultures alive without refrigeration. He knew that deep cellars kept food and drinks cold, but were the conditions constant enough to store long-term cultures? As for the common practice on Earth of freezing such cultures, he could forget it until reliable sub-zero refrigeration became practical. Wallington had continued pointing out problems while Yosef went through his own list. He felt discouraged and chagrined.
What was I thinking of? I know I need to consider the probability of success, yet here I go blabbing this all out to Deer and Wilwyn with hardly a thought to practicality. Shit.
Sorry, Yosef, said Deera. It doesn't sound as if this is one of your better ideas. Not until much more work has been done in preparation. However, I'll ask Brother Wilwyn to write up the idea and let him circulate it to other scholastics. Who knows? Maybe some of them will have ideas that might help.
I don't know what I was thinking of, admitted Yosef, dejected. Everything Wilwyn says is true. And I'm embarrassed. I missed the obvious problems.
Nothing to be embarrassed about, said Deera, laying a hand on Yosef's shoulder. With all your other positive ideas, when you have an occasional bad one, it's somehow reassuring to me.
Deera gasped and jerked her hand away. Yosef looked at her, surprised to see that her face was red. Is Deera embarrassed about something?
What I meant to say was that no one has good ideas every time.
True, said Wallington. I often have wonderful thoughts when I wake in the morning, only to realize the absurdity later in the day.
Wallington and the three students laughed, but Deera occupied herself with looking at her hands as she rubbed them together.
Well, this was all interesting, she said, even if not immediately useful. However, I need to get back to a desk covered in paperwork. Wilwyn, as long as Yosef is here, maybe he'd like to see how your work is progressing and what the students are doing, since he hasn't even met them yet.
Of course,
Wallington said enthusiastically.
The latest genetics results with the peas are fascinating. Then the categorization of protozoans, along with lovely pictures Erwalina here is making.
Oh, and just so much else.
In that case, I'll leave you all alone.
With those words, Deera spun and left. She's flustered, Yosef realized. Maybe it pleased her to know I could make mistakes, and it embarrassed her. Yosef felt more than ready to retreat to his workshops and to more concrete successes. But when he looked at Wallington's eager face, he figured he needed to let one of his most enthusiastic converts to new knowledge show off his work, for a few minutes anyway.
Of course, Wilwyn. I'm eager to see the latest,
Yosef said, the lie evident only in his stiff smile. The next 2 endless hours tested Yosef's patience. As much as he respected Wallington's commitment to delve into new and unexpected realms of biology, the man demonstrated nothing Yosef didn't already know and no items to interest him. Yosef perceived that the tour was winding down when Wallington said he meant to ask Yosef about something. He led Yosef into a side storeroom, piled to the ceiling with wooden boxes, crates, and loose objects of all shapes and sizes.
A herder brought me something several years ago that he found half buried in one of his pastures. It looks like intricate artwork, but neither I nor anyone else has any idea what it is. I've wondered if you might recognize it.
Wallington rummaged through boxes, mumbling to himself.
Now, where did it go? I haven't seen it for about a year, but I know I put it somewhere in this area.
Ah! Here it is.
He pulled out a flattish object about 8 inches across.
Let's go back in the workroom where we have more light, over next to the window.
Yosef followed Wallington, who blew dust off the object, gave it a quick swipe with a cloth, and then held it out. Yosef reached for it, then his whole body froze as he stared thunderstruck at the object. Seconds passed. Almost a minute. Yosef?
Yosef?
Yosef, are you all right?
Said Wallington, as his prompting morphed into concern. Yosef's shaking hand moved closer to the object, barely touching it with a forefinger. He jerked his finger back, then forward again, and this time his hand gently folded around the cool surface.
Suddenly he grasped the object and snatched it from Wallington's hand, eliciting a yelp as a sharp edge cut a shallow furrow in the startled brother's palm.
Still speechless, Yosef pulled the object closer to his face. His pupils dilated as his eyes bored into every detail. For moments, his mind searched for an explanation for what he held. He groped for and discarded the even remotely plausible and moved on to the fantastical before coming back to the first jolting impression. There was no doubt in his mind. Though he had never seen the exact form and design, there was no question. He held a fragment of a printed circuit board, a piece of technology 3 or 4 centuries ahead of anything that should exist on Anyar. He turned it over. Minute metallic-looking lines snaked over the surface, intersecting small areas of different shapes. Shapes he assumed were components whose purpose he had no clue. The circuits and the components were finer than anything he had seen on Earth. Though he reminded himself he wasn't familiar with the most advanced technologies, it had the look and conveyed an innate sense of technology well advanced beyond Earth's. Wallington gripped his left forearm and shook him.
Yosef, what's wrong?
Momentarily shaken from a stupor, Yosef looked up from the board. An anxious brother Wallington stared wide-eyed, the students flanking him with faces concerned or puzzled. Yosef felt the need to say something, but what clamored to exit his mouth couldn't be said, not aloud, and not to these witnesses. He cleared his throat, started to say something, and stopped. More moments passed. Wallington had quit shaking him, but still gripped his arm. Yosef cleared his throat again.
Sorry, Wilwyn. I think you're right that this is a piece, or more likely a fragment, of an artwork. For a moment it reminded me of a decoration my parents had in their house. Naturally, that reminded me of home and that I likely won't ever see any of them again.
It was lame, yet all he could think of. He felt desperate to be alone so he could process what he held. Wallington's face relaxed.
Oh, sorry, it brought back sad thoughts.
He didn't know whether Wallington believed his explanation, but Yosef thought that for once, his reputation for being a bit odd had come to his aid.
Maybe this will give a clue to where your homeland is, Yosef,
said Wallington.
If it's a style of art characteristic of where you originated, then there must have been other contacts between there and Cadellium besides yourself.
Yosef needed to deflect the scholastic's thinking and get himself somewhere alone and in possession of the board.
No, he said. Now that I look closer, it's not as similar as I first thought. It just reminds of things I don't want to forget. Would it be all right if I borrow this for a few months?
Wallington hesitated.
Well, it's unique, so I don't want to lose it.
I won't lose it, said Yosef.
and will return it any time you want to study it. I'll probably only want it to remind me of home for a little longer.
Yosef didn't say he thought the absent-minded scholastic might forget it existed as months passed, and he remained engrossed in the new realms of study revealed by Yosef.
Yes, please take it. Just bring it back if you ever think you don't need it anymore,
said Wallington, with an almost apologetic tone, as if thinking he shouldn't have hesitated to grant Yosef's wish. With a stuttered thanks and a perfunctory nod to the three students, Yosef hurried off the abbey grounds. Instead of taking the common road toward his house, he cut through a grove of trees, the same grove where he had temporarily fled to gather himself after the Baldorian raid. There, in a small clearing, a decaying log provided a seat, or a prone platform, depending on Yosef's mood. Today he sat on the log and held the board in both hands on his lap.
A circuit board,
he said to the trees.
Good God Almighty, a circuit board! Or something that serves the same purpose.
Harley told me the Watchers kept hands off the people on planets they observed.
Had he lied?
I have no way to judge the truth of anything he told me.
I've just assumed things I had no reason to trust. For Christ's sake, they're aliens! Beings from a culture that has to be so different from ours that it was stupid of me not to think harder that they might not tell me all of the truth.
Or maybe their version of the truth and mine aren't the same. He stopped talking aloud and brought the board closer to his eyes.
Wait a minute,
he uttered, using a fingernail to pry at a broken edge. What he'd first taken to be a single layer, he could tease apart into multiple layers, like thin paper stuck together. He worried at the edge for several minutes before he gave up trying to determine the exact number of layers. Must be 50 or more, he mumbled. Might even be hundreds. And I just can't separate them. He set the board back on his lap and looked up, not concentrating on anything specific, his eyes unfocused as he ruminated on the shocking revelation.
So, there is evidence of beings besides humans on this planet. If not now, then in the past.
The board's dirty. When I rub and scratch it, the underlying surfaces are unmarked, so I can't estimate how long it lay in the ground. And it's a broken piece.
What broke it?
An accident like the one that led me here? A battle between who? Or should I say what? The technology is way ahead of anything on Earth. Although I shouldn't try to second guess how fast things developed there. Still, it's well ahead of Earth. But is it enough ahead to be the Watchers? Maybe. Then again, maybe it's not the Watchers, but whoever they said transplanted humans. Some other alien race. Ones the Watchers haven't identified. He shook his head. Once again, too many questions arose to which he'd likely never have satisfactory answers. I suppose all I can say for sure is that probably either the Watchers or the... what the hell should I call them? The Others? One of them visited the surface of Anyar and left a fragment of a computer or something using advanced printed circuits. The original got damaged by accident or conflict and then discarded or lost when they left? Yosef stopped speaking aloud as another thought hit him. Hell, why assume they've left? Harley said they were observing, and I assumed from orbit. But why not from the surface or invisible drones? Whatever cloaking technology failed in the vessel that collided with my flight might also be used for occupied or robotic surveillance in the atmosphere. Shit.
One could be hovering right over my head for all I know. This disconcerting thought made him reflexively scan the sky and the airspace within the grove of trees. Nothing was visible. Of course it wouldn't be visible, you dimwit, he told himself, unconsciously switching to internal monologue, instead of speaking aloud where something might overhear. Then, realizing what he had done, he flushed with anger and yelled skyward.
Okay, so it's stupid to think you're monitoring me. But if you are, fuck you, and whatever horse, jabberwocky, slimeball, robot, or whatever you rode in on. Thanks for nothing! Yeah, you repaired me, but it was your fucking mistake that caused all this!
A two-handed, middle-fingered salute to the sky completed his statement, followed by his breaking into laughter so hard it took several minutes to subside, as he held onto his stomach with both arms. When his semi-hysterical outburst was over, Yosef sat back on the log.
Okay. Get yourself back in control. Nothing has changed. I'm here. Even if I'm being observed, I'll never know it, and I still have to live my life and deal with all that involves. The Narthani, my project's Mara, the coming child, and the one already here.
He looked again at the sky, knowing once more that nothing would be the same. He would never again look up without lingering wonder, even if deep in a corner of his mind, whether someone or something watched him. It was time to go home. He stood and walked to the edge of the grove, then stopped short. He hadn't asked Wallington whether he had any other objects like this. Yosef retraced his steps back to Wallington's workroom. The three students had left. Wallington was bent over a flat of pea seedlings, examining some feature and making notes in a ledger.
Excuse me, Wilwyn. I forgot to ask you something.
The surprised scholastic jumped at the unexpected voice.
Yosef? Back again? Did you forget something? Oh, you said you had a question.
Yosef held up the circuit board fragment.
Is this the only piece like this you have?
Yes, said Wallington. I've never heard of any such object before. I asked the herder who brought this one in if there were any more like this. He said he had only seen it because he dismounted to check his horse's hoof. Only a portion of it was sticking out of the ground. A month later, he was in Abersford, and we ran into each other. He told me he'd gone back to the same spot and dug quite a bit, but he didn't find anything else.
Too bad, said Yosef. Next time you see him, would you ask him to come see me? I might be interested in going to the same spot and looking around myself.
Of course, Yosef, I'll let him know. I only see him every month or more, so I don't know when I can give him your request. Unfortunately, I also didn't get his name or where exactly he lives.
No problem, said Yosef, and no hurry.
Thanks. I'll let you get back to your piece.
Yosef turned to leave, walked three steps, then stopped when yet another thought occurred to him. He turned again.
Besides this object, is there anything you or anyone else has ever come across that is odd?
Odd, Wallington repeated.
In what way?
Just different from anything else people are used to seeing, or something that is unexplainable and a bit mysterious?
Well, nothing I can think of.
Except for possibly flaghorn eggs.
Flaghorn eggs? Repeated Yosef, suppressing an insane urge to giggle.
Are they like dragon eggs, or maybe the ones of Fabergé?
Best to keep the former out of the fire and the other ones locked up safe. Wallington's face appeared blank with incomprehension. Then Yosef did giggle briefly before choking it back down.
Never mind, just some random thought of mine. Like I'm going to explain the dragon eggs from Game of Thrones, or the jeweled Russian Easter eggs of the Tsars.
Flaghorn eggs, repeated Yosef.
What in the world are flaghorn eggs? They're supposed to come from a mythological creature that doesn't exist on Anyar anymore. I only know they're referenced in a few of the oldest known writings. It's just legend, of course. But there are these odd-shaped rock formations that people have named flaghorn eggs. None around here, and I've only seen one myself, in Huel province. I know people who have seen the ones in Vandinka and Powell provinces, and I understand they're found elsewhere on Cadellium. They look like two-thirds of a big egg sticking out of the ground, with the small egg end up. Now that I think about it, I wonder if anyone's ever dug down to see if the buried part is the other egg end. Anyway, they're about 3 feet high, completely smooth, smoother than polished marble. A dark blue color, and I have my doubts about this part. Some say they occasionally feel warm, even in the coldest weather. Again, as you can imagine, there are rumors of strange happenings associated with the eggs, as happens with all phenomena that superstitious people can't explain. I'm sure they're just an unusual type of rock with a rational explanation for whatever they are. Half an hour earlier, Yosef would have blown off flaghorn eggs. After seeing the circuit board fragment, however, and his thinking session on his log, he was of a mind to allow that anything could be possible. I'll give it two options. Either, as Wilwyn says, it's probably some weird rock, or it's a device of one of the alien races. If the latter, pick your favorite BEM. Although I guess they could be slime blobs instead of bug-eyed monsters.
That's all I know about them, said Wallington. At the moment, I can't think of any other strange objects like you asked about.
Okay. Thanks, Wilwyn. I'll take my leave again and quit bothering you.
No, no, Yosef, said Wallington. Any visit from you is always interesting, even in cases where I don't understand what you're saying.
Yosef grunted and left. He took the common road home this time, and it gave him enough moments to decide that if the opportunity arose, he'd try to get a look at flaghorn eggs.